Greetings to all in the name of Jesus. I count it an honor to have been asked, although I would say that I would rather in honor prefer someone else, like the Bible teaches. Yet, here I am, and just seeing your faces and remembering our time here, brings back it's a lot of memories, and maybe a little more on that later, but as Jonathan was speaking, I noticed several words there. The attributes of God and what God is wanting for us. And I started writing a few down, but of course there were so many of them that I didn't get very far. But the faithfulness of God, how excellent are his ways. And he's upright, he's holy, he provides for us in so many things. He gives us light and life. And then finally, that the God of peace would make us perfect in every good work to do his will. And I want to talk about that idea just a little bit this morning. I have entitled the message, The Value of Real Friends. In our quest for perfection, we often stop short of including the most important things. Turn with me to Psalm 144. I want to read verse 9 through 15. And note that from the creation, God puts Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and this was a perfect place. And they had to go mess it up. You know, we have been searching for this ever since. Where is that? Can we get back there? Is there some way we can make even our situation here better, more like Eden? And so we build bigger houses, we get more property, we make things nicer for us, more comfortable. We're searching for this perfect place. The psalmist was also looking for this. And of course, depending on your perspective and your worldview, you might have different ideas of what it takes to be perfect. So the psalmist is saying in starting verse 9 in Psalm 144, he says, I will sing a new song unto thee, O God, upon the psaltery. And an instrument of 10 strings will I sing praises unto thee. It is he that giveth salvation unto kings, who delivereth David his servant from the hurtful sword. Rid me and deliver me from the hand of strange children, whose mouth speaketh vanity, and their right hand is a right hand of falsehood. That our sons may be as plants grown up in their youth, and that our daughters may be as cornerstones polished after the similitude of a palace. That our garners may be full, affording all manner of store, that our sheep may bring forth thousands and 10,000s in our streets, that our oxen may be strong to labor, that there be no breaking in nor going out, that there be no complaining in our streets. Happy is that people that is in such a case, yea, happy is that people whose God is the Lord. Notice the desire for a peaceful environment, a place where, well, just see what he says here, no falsehoods, no vanity. And if you think about the idea of falsehoods and vanity, where does that come from? It comes from other people, right? So if you've got people in your community that are people of, they tell lies, you probably know someone like that kind of, yeah, they'll tell the truth when a lie don't suit, but it's just you cannot believe what they say. And this complicates the issue. How are we supposed to live in peace when people won't use truth? Vanity. That hits us a little closer to home. How many things do we do for vanity? The way we look, what we drive, the way we build our house, the way we appear. I think we can admit that we all have just a little bit of vanity there. But if we could be in a community with no vanity, that we're all just open, this is just who we are. We're here to integrate together into this wonderful community of goodwill and of course prosperity he mentions here. You know, we want well-adjusted homes, children that grow up being socially adjusted and emotionally stable. That's really what we want. We'd like to have a place that builds us up and makes for where we, our family, and then our friends and everyone around us. We have this peaceful community. Well provided for. We have enough. Have enough to eat. We have plenty for all of our projects. We have a big enough house. We have just everything is good. There's no complaining. There's really no reason to complain. If we just had that, if we had a little more, we would not need to complain. And so this is where we really want to be. You probably know people that complain. Not you, of course. You're just stating facts. But some people complain. Okay, so things are productive. Like, you know, all your business does well. The people around you, they're also doing well. We're all productive, and things are going quite well. You have resourceful neighbors that are just a blessing to have. And yeah, some of us experience that, part of that at least. So we have a picture here of a prosperous community, and he sums this up with this statement. Happy is that people that is in such a case. Now, if I would ask you, is that your experience this morning? Is this where you find yourself? How many of you could honestly say that, you know, this exactly, it describes where I'm at. This describes my community. This describes my church. This is where I live. And we are truly blessed. Probably we could find something that's not quite up to par, most likely. And whose fault is it? Probably some of the people that are around us. I can't believe that all of you people here this morning are as sincere as I am. You know, I mean, there's probably somebody that's causing a glitch in my plans for perfection. But, you know, we want to get back to Eden. We really want a prosperous, happy society. But the psalmist says, happy is that people whose God is the Lord. There is no other way to achieve this. So maybe, though the things he is asking for are not wrong at all. In fact, I think we should all desire this kind of thing. But sometimes we look for the blessing at the wrong place. And the psalmist just recognizes that unless God is the Lord, this will not happen. But we do find a people in the Old Testament that they did experience this, and they didn't have God as the Lord. I want to look a little bit at that this morning. And we think, well, just how? How did you get such a prosperous community, and everything is going well, and you don't serve the Lord? Well, in Judges chapter 18, we find a picture here. So the story is, and we're familiar with the story, so the tribe of Dan comes into this land of Canaan, and they were dividing out the properties, and the tribe of Dan found that they didn't have enough of their property yet. They needed more space. They really needed somewhere to go. Well, the reason they didn't have what they should have had is because they stopped short of taking and following God and making sure that that they were thorough in their conquest of Canaan. Nevertheless, here's where they were. They needed more space. So they sent out five men. And they said, I want you to go out and look and see if you can find a place where we can go and we can move into there. And so they went, I believe it was north there, into Canaan, and they found this city called Laish. And I want to read from Judges chapter 18, verse 7 first. It says, then the five men departed and came to Laish and saw the people that were therein, how they dwelt careless after the manner of Zidonians, quiet and secure, and there was no magistrate in the land that might put them to shame in anything. And they were far from the Zidonians and had no business with any man. Now, let's stop and just think about that a little bit. So here were some people who, they had a prosperous time. They were quiet in the land. There was nobody that was threatening them. And we don't like when people threaten our lifestyle, our way of life. We don't like when people challenge our ideas. These people had it made. Nobody was there to say, hey, Are you sure that that's a good idea to do that? No, they said, oh, let's just live and let live. We're all happy here, right? We got plenty. And if someone does wrong, as long as it wasn't specifically against someone else that causes friction, what's the big deal, they said. And sometimes in our desire for peace, we would like to see, our desire gets a little bit closer to what the people of Laish were experiencing than what the psalmist was envisioning. So they had several things going in their favor, I guess you'd say. They were careless, and that is, they didn't have to worry about the things of making a living. The word careless there would simply mean without care, without the concerns and the worries. It also indicates that there's a letting down of the guard too, because you didn't need a guard. So there's really no reason to guard something that's not going to be attacked. They had plenty. They lived careless after the manner of the Zidonians. And the Zidonians were actually a very prosperous community as well, as were these. And they pretty much had it made. I don't know if they were without any threats as far as militarily, but at least they were a very established community, and they had it made. So these people seems like was an outreach from Zidon, and they had some connection there, but it was distant. So they were they didn't have to be careful the way they lived. They were fine. It says they were quiet. That means there were no arguments. There were no disturbances in the community. And they respected each other enough to get along just fine. They had it made. And, you know, like I said, we live and let live. It's no big deal. They were secure. They were safe from intruders. There was no reason to guard against an army coming. You know, they're far out there. Nobody's coming to take their property. So they didn't see a problem there. They were also uninstructed. It says there was no magistrate there that would put them to shame in anything and say, hey, can't do that. And, you know, we chafe against that kind of thing sometimes. We think we have some pretty good ideas, and someone else says, well, that's not going to work. That violates a principle of whatever it is. And so we don't like that. We wish for that peaceful society where people would let us alone. Well, these people had it. There was no magistrate there. There was nobody to tell them, look, you're wrong. And so, yeah, made for peace, right? One more thing, they were alone. Now, loneliness means different things to different people. To be alone, for me in my work and being involved in church work and things, I sometimes just want to be left alone. I want to crawl under a rock and I'll be fine there. But these people were a long ways from any help. And so, but being alone has its advantages, because when you're alone, you don't have to listen to someone else prattle on about their own things. You know, people are so selfish and they talk about their own things. I can hardly get a chance to talk about mine. If I'm alone, I don't have to put up with that. And I don't have to look at their culture and try to adjust. And, you know, it's just, you know, people just do things differently and we don't understand it. Wouldn't it be better just to be off? And our community does things our way. We don't care. This is one thing we discovered in Oklahoma when we moved over there. We had a different method of titling and licensing our vehicles and what you had to do, the requirements. And I know at least one brother told me this, and I did it myself. I said, okay, well, so it's this way. But in Missouri, we had to do it this way, and they let us know right away, we don't care how you do it in Missouri. That was very evident. And, you know, this is kind of our own little community here. We don't care how anyone else does it. We want to be left alone. And if we're left alone, surely we'll be happy, right? It all went very well until verse 27, in the last part there, it says that they came unto Laish, unto a people that were quiet and secure, and they smote them with the edge of the sword and burnt the city with fire. And there was no deliverer because it was far from Zidon, and they had no business with any man, and it was in the valley that lieth by Beth-Rehob. They had no business with any man. They didn't need anyone else. You know, you probably thought about it, and I have at least. Wouldn't it be nice to be at a place where you can just take care of yourself? You're self-sufficient. You don't need to, you know, no electric bill. No, you just make it yourself. Everything you need, you take care of. It looks like that these people were literally destroyed because of the lack of tension. And by tension, I mean the thing that would hold us in check and would challenge us. And, you know, it's like in order to get anything done, you need to have effort, but you need to have tension. You cannot operate without tension. In engines, you have a timing chain that spins, so the engine is spinning at an RPM. You got a chain that then runs the camshaft, or two or four, however many. That chain has more wear on the slack side than it does on the pulling side, which seems odd. Here we had to pull, so this engine is pulling, and it's pulling the chain down, pulling against this camshaft, and that's that. There's tension there, but on the slack side, it suddenly is released, but it actually gets more wear on that. So they do something, the engineers have decided to do something about that, so they put a tensioner there. It keeps that side tight too, and preserves the chain and the function of the engine. We're very much the same in that sense. We almost have to have tension. None of us are perfect enough to go all about life without a certain amount of tension. But the Zidonians tried it and pretty much succeeded, except that there came a time when that lack of tension was their destruction. They had completely distanced themselves. They had said, we don't need any tension. And we're just going to go off here. We're going to do our own thing. But that was not, it did not work for them. We also have an enemy that will use that lack of tension to destroy us. We're talking about the value of real friends. And I'd like to just think about that a little bit, about how people influence us and change us, and how sometimes that tension is exactly what we need, even though we, at the time, didn't think so. All right. As we think about friends, I wonder. You know, the word friend is used in maybe a casual way today. I hear people saying, yeah, a friend of mine. And sometimes you discover, well, they haven't actually talked to that friend in like a couple years. They know who they are. But so it sounds good to say I have friends. So these friends of mine, this is a friend of mine. And that gives us credibility. We're a community person, right? But is it true? Is it really a friendship? The idea of being a friend and of having friends is a little bit contorted. We have today we have Facebook, who has kind of set a tone of what it means to have friends, and so we can have a Facebook account, and we might have 200, 300, 400 friends. Is that true? Are they really friends? So the word is not not used very properly there. Sometimes these friends really are not, they're kind of casual acquaintances. Sometimes we don't even know what they stand for. And because of that, we have to unfriend them if they disagree with us, because we didn't realize that they were a problem in our life until they came out with an opinion, and so now we unfriend them. So is that the kind of friends that we want? Will they build us up? I remember the story here. It's just probably 10 or 15 years ago, maybe longer, of the woman who she rented a storefront, and it was a store that wasn't being used otherwise, and it was right along the street, a city street. I don't remember a lot of the details of the story, but it was all glass in the front, so it was a storefront. So she rented that, and she lived in that storefront for, I think, a month. And everything she did was in the open, with the exception of course, the bathroom. But she lived there, but she never stepped outside. She had no contact with anybody except through, I'm not sure. Anyhow, she never talked, she never heard a human voice in that whole month. She did this to make a point. She said, this is how society so often is living. People, hundreds and thousands of people passed her every day. She has no interaction with them. She did not know those people. They were friends, they were close, they were only a few feet away, but there was no communication. And that's a little bit what happens when we don't value the relationships that God has inflicted us with, sometimes we think. Actually, he has blessed us with it, but people are disillusioned because in their selfishness, they run up against problems with almost everybody around them. And generally speaking, if you find somebody that can hardly get along with anybody, what is the common denominator there? We can kind of see where the problem might lie. But all of us have a little bit of that resistance to close relationship, because close relationship means giving. Just try a marriage, for instance. Marriage is great. I recommend it. But, you know, there's a learning thing there, and there's work to a good marriage, and it's a blessing. It's God has said that this can really be good, and it is a picture of God's relationship with us. But some people find it a picture of turmoil and confusion, of mistrust. Why? Because they tried to build it without God. Happy are the people whose God is the Lord, and upon that basis we begin to learn that what God has given us is good, and we make the best of it. We find a society that is running from instruction, cancel culture. I don't want to hear it. I'm not open to other ideas. Are you going to have many friends with that kind of idea, that kind of mentality? Probably not. In Proverbs 18, verse 2, he says, a fool hath no delight in understanding, but that his heart may discover itself. Right there is the problem. Selfishness in the heart of people ruins relationships all around us, and can do so even in a conservative church. It can do so even in what we call a godly environment. Selfishness destroys. Because it focuses on me, and it wants to get just me. And as a result, we have just a lot of conflict in society. I was thinking about the song that I heard as a boy. We had a record by George Beverly Shea. And he sang, tired of a life without meaning, always in a crowd, yet alone. It's a song of the cross, coming to the cross and realizing that everything should change. But that impressed me, always in a crowd, but alone. Surrounded by people, but alone. Because we're running away. We have only self-interest. And if those people do not meet our criteria for helping us to our goals, then we want to shell them off. We don't really need them anymore. But there is such a thing as helpful friends. There is light. There is the positive note. And that is of having friends. And as I stand here and as I see you all here, so many of you, that, you know, I realize that you've had some impact on my life in some way. And it does us good to, I think the older we get, the more we realize that we are not in and of ourselves just able to handle everything. Hopefully, God can help us to value the security that we can have, not because people agree with us, but when they actually criticize us. You know, it's a blessing to have someone criticize you. I'm not saying it feels great. I'm just saying it's a blessing. And that maybe that's the thing that will save us from making a fool of ourselves later. There is a peace that comes with submission. And this is why we're told to, Paul says that elders, the younger, submit yourselves to the elder. But then he says, no, all of you, be subject to each other. There's submission that comes. Brotherhood, and this picture of Eden, is expensive because it costs us our rights. We have to lay that down. We have to begin to listen. We have to begin to interact with those people who have different ideas. And is it a good thing or bad? Well, it's actually a good. This is God's blessing to us. The peace that can come with submission is something that the world does not know, because they say, I will have peace when I don't have to submit. That is what gives me peace. And actually, that's completely backwards. God says that's not the way it works. There's an empowerment when we find a group of people with single purpose, that we literally are good for each other. There are perverse people, we call them, people that, you know, kind of like sandpaper, but you know what sandpaper does? It does smooth out things, and that little friction's good for us. It helps to rub off the rough edges, and is actually also a blessing, and something we should be grateful for, instead of writing people off, to listen to them and figure out, well, what makes them kind of caustic? And maybe there's something that God wants you to influence them as well. But we learn so much from not the people that agree with us. In fact, we learn very little from the people that agree with us. We learn a lot from the people that disagree. And hopefully our ideas are formed by our interaction with each other and brought to a balance because we're willing to listen. There's the comfort that we can enjoy by being with imperfect friends. Did you know that if your friends were all perfect, you would be sitting on pins and needles? Because if you do anything wrong, you know, it used to bother me just coming up front to speak, because I used to think that, you know, well, all the preachers I knew, they had it down pat. They could speak, and they never made any mistake, never mispronounced a word, I didn't think. Anyhow, after I was a little older, and I remember what a comfort it was to me to be serving with Brother Joe, and he would make a mistake. And, he's human. This is good. This was actually good news. And the fact that if you were here among perfect people, you would not be comfortable. You absolutely would be worried that you're going to do something, some faux-pas that will show you up for your low societal standing here. But to be with imperfect people and to love them anyhow, this is what God wants of us. And he says there's comfort in that. There's encouragement of just being with that kind of people. I noticed that Paul, the Apostle Paul, in his book to the Galatians, he start commending people. And the, like I said, the older we get, the more we realize that, you know, a lot of people had a part to play in who we are and what we were able to get done. And if I counted right, I think he mentions 36 different people that he commends for their interaction with him. And he never considered them as servants, even though we think of, you know, production Paul, he's going out and getting things done, so he needs people that'll help and to serve. But Paul said, no, these are fellow helpers. These are, we're all in this together. And he didn't have much patience for people that said, well, I'm of Paul. And others, well, I'm of Apollos. You know, I follow Apollos. And he's, that's wrong. He said, just follow Jesus. And if we can be an example, great. But Paul and Apollos are just servants themselves. There's no point in making anything more of that. We are all in this together. These are helpers in life. It's good to have friends that are not caught up in the conflict and sometimes the emotion of situations, and that can step aside and say, well, what I see is this. And it's true that in every conflict, there are two sides to the story. And we often can't see it clearly, because we're here, we're in this, this is us. And so we need someone else to kind of give maybe an overview of it and say, well, okay, what about this? And I've experienced some of that. I'm grateful for a lot of the influence of thinking of David and his, I especially think of David because, you know, David and Marcia moved to Seymour, and so there was a friendship there. That's where I was ordained, and I got to serve with David for several years, and then I've known him a lot. And one of the things that I appreciated was the ability to not get just caught up in the daily, but to see through and kind of keep your perspective straight. And that has really been helpful to me. Not so much that there was a lot of interference or just words of counsel, more than just the stability. And I get that from different sources as well. And as I think of our time here, you know, the different things that I actually think differently about now than I did then, a lot of it was because of the interaction that we had. And it brings up just a lot of memories as I think back of you know, how all you people have influenced me. I want to read Ephesians chapter 4. I need to wrap this up. I just heard recently that there's a fine line between a long sermon and a hostage situation. So we want to be edified, but not to the point of boredom. Okay, so Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11 through 16, it says, he gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers for the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. I think I'll stop there. It gives us this idea of growing, of being perfect, of being a person who is well-adjusted and well-informed and who experiences that presence of Christ, the fullness of Christ. But how does it happen? Well, it says in verse 11, he gave some apostles, just some, not all of them. He didn't give all of them. So we have different gifts, I guess you'd say. And there's one thing about it, that when God gives something, it's for a purpose. He didn't have leftover things, and he's not going through the list and says, got a few people here, I'm not sure what to do with them. Should I? Well, let's create a position here. Maybe prophets. Okay, we'll put these in prophets, and I'm not sure what they do, but anyhow, we'll just. No, God didn't do that. He said, I made this for a purpose. So if he did, it tells us that unless we have interaction with the different gifts, we will never be this well-adjusted person who understands the love of Christ and the experience of just knowing Christ. We can't have that. God made it on purpose. And all of God's creation is for a purpose. Some of those we don't understand. I remember William McGrath saying that weeds are God's provision that we don't understand yet. And I agree with the not understanding. I'm not sure what purpose a ragweed is, but remember, it was made by an all-wise God. So if God puts people in your life that are a little more difficult to work with, there's apparently a reason. He did not do this casually. It was on purpose. God is a God of order, and he knows what he is doing. We actually need accountability. That's another point that I'd like to make here. We need accountability, but remember this. Accountability is not someone looking over your shoulder. It's you seeking it out. If you wait for someone else to go and hold you accountable, you might wait a long time. And guess what we do? We hide from that. Naturally, someone's looking over our shoulder, we quickly move away. It doesn't feel comfortable. If, on the other hand, we understand the value of real friends that are there to help us, we begin to open up and we begin to ask for advice. We begin to say, I'm struggling with this, would you hold me accountable? I know a man who had a habit of smoking in his past life, and he asked one of our church brothers to, he said, would you hold me accountable? Ask me and just make sure that I'm in victory in this. And so that worked. And it was a blessing to both of them. You have to seek accountability. You can't just assign it to someone else. Like one person said, well, I asked them, they were supposed to contact me and they never did, and that's why I fell. No, it's like you reach out. You know what's good for you. Protect yourself by reaching out and placing yourself under another's, supervision, you might say. The last point, we don't live alone. We are a person who God has placed in a situation with a lot of people around us, and as I said, it's for a purpose. We do not live alone. We cannot live alone and still be of any value. If you've gained something, it's most likely because of the people around you that helped you in that. Now, if we've lost something, we can't blame it on other people. That's our choice whether or not to grow. I just read a quote recently. It says that when you were born, you look like your parents, but when you die, you look like your decisions and your choices. And yes, that is true. We see that demonstrated in the real world. Just a few verses in Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs 1, verse 20 to 23. Wisdom crieth without, she uttereth her voice in the streets. She crieth in the chief place of concourse, in the openings of the gates. In the city she uttereth her words, saying, how long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity? And the scorners delight in their scorning, and the fools hate knowledge. Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you. I will make known my words unto you. All right, then, dropping down to verse 32. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. But whoso hearkeneth unto me shall dwell safely, and shall be quiet from fear of evil. Notice that picture coming back of a society that is secure and happy. How does it come? By hearkening to wisdom. If God in his wisdom has given us friends and influences and told us to make use of that, and we say, no, we're not going to do it, we're turning away our hearts and our minds from God's provision, and it's not going to end well. If, on the other hand, we embrace that, we listen to wisdom, and wisdom is understanding the provision of God. In closing, I guess I just want to thank you. As I look, I see a lot of you here that I think about. You know, in our time here, James and Will, David, Murray. Don't remember Jonathan much. He was pretty small, but nevertheless, we have memories of him too. Wayne, Ron Schrock, Ron Hostetler. These are people that were here. Steve Overholt, I worked with. Levi. I think about these all the time. I think of Steve Overholt coming to work with a book about this thick, and just how. But he would sit back there and absorb something, I guess. And Levi, I still have that trailer you sold me after we moved. I still got it. It's actually worth more now than what it was then because of the price of everything. And but, you know, these are all, we're not alone in this. We have just a lot of people helping us to where we were, to be where we are today. And the help we received in building our house and the support here, we just want to bless you in this. And for David and Marcia, as you enter your retired phase, it's probably not all retirement. At least I haven't found it that way. Except that retired, I'm tired again. So in that way, it's proper. But I want to bless you in that, because this is not one of the things that is a sign of a healthy church is when you can have people who are there and who can step back. And I say back, not down. You step back from leadership. That is a sign that things are going in the right direction. You're helping. You're part of the process. And it's interesting that sometimes we get more commendation for stepping back than we did for stepping up. So not sure what that says, but maybe we're still holding our breath on Jonathan and Brian and Murray. But we can finally exhale now that some of us are stepping back. And but nevertheless, I want to extend this blessing, and I want you to do the same, that you bless the people around you for helping you to be where God wants you to be. I am grateful for the help that we have and the examples that we have. Not one person is the perfect example, but together we can be better because of it, and we can together show the love of God then to those around us. Let's kneel for prayer.